know, I'm never going to forget the morning where I was going for a run and I ran to the ocean fully clothed and just surrendered. I said, I was having a deep, honest prayer or conversation with whatever was out there that is greater than me. And I said, I'm at your service and I'm here to be a vehicle of whatever you need to do through me. Just show me what I need to do. Show me where I need to be, how I need to be to just be a vehicle of whatever is here for myself and for humanity.
Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge. What if you could hang out with high-performing executives, entrepreneurs, and leaders? Ask them about how psychedelics have impacted their self-improvement journeys. Then take an insight or two to guide your own growth. Each week, Alex Atwood takes an in-depth look at how psychedelics can increase fulfillment, solve personal problems affecting your career, and help you gain the success you seek. Alex is an executive and psychedelics coach to high performers, and his goal is to provide strategies to help you reduce conflict, bring awareness, and balance your life through the use of psychedelics. Now, here's Alex.
Everyone, I want to welcome you to another episode of The Alchemist Lounge. Today we have Pablo Lucero. Pablo is a yogi practitioner and he's a breathwork practitioner. And the first time that I ever experienced a retreat with plant medicine, specifically ayahuasca, Pablo was one of the facilitators there. And I experienced so much transformation and through not only just the plant medicine and all the programming in this particular retreat, but also through the breath work and through the yoga exercises that Pablo facilitated. So I'm really excited to learn more about Pablo. I'm excited to learn about how he went from a legal career to a path as a yogi. So without further ado, please welcome to the Alchemist Lounge, Pablo Lucero.
How are you, bro?
I am doing marvelous. I'm doing fantastic. And thanks for coming on the Alchemist Lounge. I'm so excited to talk to you about my experience in a retreat, a plant medicine retreat that included the work that you were doing. So I want to get into that. I want to learn more about you, your journey. I want to learn more about your philosophies around not just yoga, but around well-being in general and how we can take some practical tools from what you teach and apply them to our lives. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, let's get it started. So I want to start in one place. So I read something that you wrote. It was, if you want to experience a miracle, breathe. And I've heard so many times how powerful breath is. And I've actually experienced it myself, partially beginning in a retreat where you were facilitating breath work. But what I want to understand is, when did you first experience the power of breath?
You know, for me, it was when I began my meditation practice, my meditation journey when I was 18. And it took a couple of years to get to a point where I recognized the power of breath. And yoga definitely helped me to discover more of that in a more tantric approach, meaning in the more practical day-to-day life, in a sense where things may be challenging and chaotic, all I have available to me is that I can control is my breath. And that's where it starts for me. So it was meditation and yoga that really propelled me to acknowledge the power of breathing.
Mm. Now, you said you were 18 when you first started down this path. What was your life like when you were 18?
You know, as a typical 18-year-old, rebellious, adventurous, and excited, just life and in general. And, you know, my parents were into the esoteric world of self-development and mysticism and meditation. So they threw me in a seminar where it was all meditation. Pretty much we were meditating about 4 to 5 hours a day and guided meditation. So it was fascinating. It definitely allowed me to see and recognize that there's more to life than the superficial go to work, study, you know, get married and retire.
Yeah. Did that completely change the trajectory of your life to that point? Because you mentioned you were thrown into it. So it sounds like maybe that was something that you didn't necessarily appeal to you at the moment, or did it? Was it something that you just felt natural about?
Yeah, I was always inspired and curious about mysticism and the world of yoga, philosophy, Buddhist philosophy, indigenous philosophies and ritual. But it wasn't on my own terms. It wasn't like I decided to go on this 5-day seminar to learn about meditation. It was more my parents saying, hey, you need to straighten yourself out. And this is what you're going to do this weekend. Yeah.
So when you were there, what opened up? Like what specifically opened up that you saw that as being something that could potentially be a path forward?
What opened up for me was the connection to myself as a being, as a human being, the raw and authentic connection to myself that really allowed me to look at life from that essence outward and recognize later on as a more mature adult that if I'm not living from this space, I'm just letting life carry me. I'm a victim of life. I'm a product of life.
Mm. Did that have you decide to take the path of a yogi immediately at 18? Or did something else sort of show up that guided you along that path?
You know, it did not. What showed up was the continuous stubbornness of a teenager into adulthood. Yeah. And growing up in Miami into the party scene. And I DJed for 13 years professionally. I went into law also for about 14 years. And knowingly, at least I was aware that there were certain things that I was doing and how I was living my life that were not good for me. I was aware of that. Mm. I just didn't, at the time, I just didn't care. I was excited living and being in that adventure on that edge.
Yeah. And so there you were. So you downloaded some knowledge at 18. So you had that sort of running in the background. And then you continued on what most 18-year-olds do who are living in South Florida, right? Who have access to so many different things and so many different, I guess you can call them distractions maybe or stimulants, right? And so there you were. So you began to pursue a legal career at the same time while you were pursuing a career as a DJ. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, my dad was like, you know, what do you want to do after high school? And I did not know. I knew that everything that a college menu had to offer, it was not something that I was interested in. Mm-hmm. So I was fulfilling something that just needed to be done, right? Mm-hmm. In a sense. And simultaneously, I was being in my creative expression, and I'm an artist. So music was my passion and my drive. So mm-hmm. I started diving into learning how to DJ. I always had a great collection of music. And that kind of naturally and took off on its own without me trying really so hard.
Did you get caught up in that lifestyle? The late nights, the parties, the, you know, everything that comes along with that Miami DJ life?
You know, in my early 20s, I didn't get caught up in it, but it was definitely part of the routine of Thursday to Sunday. It was music and partying. And living in Miami, it was accessible. So that was part of it. I would say I had a good run for about a year and a half, and quickly recognized that that's not how I wanted to live my life.
Mm. What was it about that life that wasn't resonating with you at the time?
Alcohol and cocaine.
Yeah.
And yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, that will do it. And yet at the same time, You had this operating system that was downloaded when you were 18, and you came from a family that was steeped in these practices, right? Did you find a dissonance there between what was happening in your daily life and what you had learned and what you sort of, the truth that you found early on?
Absolutely. And I also found a connection because there were some sleepless nights, that I would go on a binge and I would be in deep inquiry journaling while I was coked up. Mm. And there were moments of great clarity and peace that I found in that experience.
Wow.
Which was interesting. Totally. There was a lot of journaling and psychoanalyzing myself and self-discovery within that. Not much. A lot of it was partying, but I did have, you know, moments of great clarity.
Now,
and dissonance and disconnect. Absolutely.
Yeah. So what's interesting is by the time 2018 rolled around and I sat in one of your facilitated yoga sessions, I was actually surprised to hear that you had somewhat of a corporate background, because it occurred to me by that point that you were completely steeped in not just yoga, but in transformational work, specifically within plant medicine. So I'm curious to know, when did that shift happen? Was there a moment there that you could no longer go down that path? What did that look like for you as you were in the legal world and DJing and suddenly making a shift?
There was a moment. There was, you know, about, I would say 15 years ago or more, there was a moment where I remember it was a Monday going into the law firm. It was like a veil had been lifted. And I was able to take an eagle's eyes view of myself in this environment and how I was walking into the law firm and how I was operating and looking at my desk and how I was communicating with other individuals doing the same thing, wearing the same clothes I was wearing. And that moment of revelation was comical. It was hilarious because there was so much tension built up through the years that I said, wow, I've been so dramatic about this. And then asking myself in that moment, is this the rest of my life? This is funny. And I literally sat back. I took off my tie, rolled up my sleeves. Now I'm tattooed up right to my wrists and up to my neck, and just sat back and laughed and looked at it as an outsider while I'm in it. And that was a great revelation for me that opened up this raw way of expressing myself authentically, genuine, and not selling out from that moment onward. And that's what cracked open really what was the next chapter of my life, which 6 months after that, I resigned from or retired from the law world. I retired from nightlife. It had already been about 5 years since I stopped, you know, going out to clubs, and went on to teaching yoga full time.
That's a pretty dramatic shift. And there must have been some alchemy that showed up there, because once you've established yourself as a DJ and once you've established yourself with this skill, this legal skill, right? Suddenly you didn't have an income or you didn't really know exactly how that was going to show up in the future, right? What did it look like to completely transform from, you know, somebody working in the corporate world and in the entertainment world to someone who's moved, you know, shifted completely over to health, well-being, and transformation like that?
It was, and it still is, a great mystery and a great unknown. It was, you know, I'm never going to forget the morning where I was going for a run and I ran to the ocean fully clothed and just surrendered. I said, I was having a deep, honest prayer or conversation with whatever was out there that is greater than me. And I said, I'm at your service. And I'm here to be a vehicle of whatever you need to do through me. Just show me what I need to do. Show me where I need to be, how I need to be to just be a vehicle of whatever is here for myself and for humanity, right? At whatever level. And that was the morning when I showed up to work, and it was the matrix. It was the curtain had been lifted. That was the beginning of the next step. Once I saw, I couldn't unsee. Once I felt, I couldn't unfeel, right? And I felt that from that point moving forward, if I'd stayed the same, in the same place, doing the same things and acting the same way, my life would just not, I would not answer to that calling.
Yeah. It sounds like you just couldn't do it anymore.
I couldn't. It was not an option. And what was great about it is that I was in a place in my life where I was happy. I was content with how life was playing out. I was practicing yoga every day, meditation every day. I was still DJing yoga events. So still connected to music. I was making good money at the law firm. So it did not make sense to change that and go into a deeper unknown. So it was not convenient, right? Which is this is the work. It's never convenient. We never have enough time, enough money, enough resources to be doing this work. So I have to give the comforts up constantly. And that was it. When I came to that understanding that, you know, through fasting, through detox, through breathing, how much inconvenience, how many things I have to put aside that I enjoy, I recognize, okay, I need to keep clearing. And the law firm and the DJ world and the distractions were part of the clearing.
So you were comfortable at that time. So it sounded like, in maybe a practical, but not so practical way, you had the income coming in and you had your music lifestyle and you were now becoming more and more steeped in yoga, but there was just that divide showing up. In other words, your calling wasn't fully realized because you were being distracted by these things that were providing you comfort. And I guess in that comfort, you didn't have the ability to grow and take that path that you wanted to take, right? So so now you've left your corporate job and you've decided that you're going to wind down the entertainment side of it. What was your first step there as a yogi, right? As a transformational worker, what was the first thing you did to get this new sort of career going outside of practicing and making sure that you understood the fundamental concepts behind it?
The first step was clearing. And it was starting with what was most proximal to me at the time that I can be in front of it and feel it and ask myself, is this in the resonance of my true self, of my essence? And can I breathe whatever this is, whether it's an ex-girlfriend or a piece of jewelry or work or finances? Is this in resonance? Is this vibrating at the same frequency? And intuition, instantly, it was a yes or no. So when I would get that no, it was like, okay, completely out of life. So I was in a relationship at that time and I said, okay, I've moved on to something else. I don't know what's happening to me, but I'm not going to take you along this ride. So time to move on. I did the same thing with my finances. I said, well, if I'm going to take a leap into the unknown, I have to be debt free. So it took me about 6 months to clear out my debts. I repoed the Mercedes-Benz and my Triumph motorcycle. So all the toys, all of the distractions, I downsized. I sold my condo. I moved to a small studio in the beautiful part of Miami. And I put in my 2 weeks resignation letter. Mm-hmm. And I started teaching yoga full time, not knowing what was going to be next. And it was scary.
Mm. And when did it start to become something that you found deep resonance with? Like at what point in that fear did you feel comforted and felt as though you were supported?
You know, this was about 17 years ago. I still don't feel comfortable.
Mm.
Because when I you know, I was hunting for that essence that I discovered when I was 18 years old, and everything around me needs to match that frequency. In order for it to match my frequency, I need to be in that position. I need to set myself up to be here in this resonance. So it's not comfortable. It's not convenient, right? As a husband, as a father, I have a house in Costa Rica. We live in the jungle. We live retreated in the mountains. It's not convenient. It's not comfortable. So when I see that I'm coming to a place where, oh, things are good. Yes, that's great. But there's also an opportunity to stay in connection to the unknown. And that's where I'm always pushing myself to that edge of the unknown, putting myself out there, showing up, right? Mm-hmm. To see myself, to see my ego, to see my patterns, to see my program, my disconnect, to see my deficiencies, my imperfections. In order to do that, I have to put myself out there to reveal myself in front of things that are not familiar to me. Mm-hmm. And still do the things that are familiar to me, of course, the mundane, the day-to-day, absolutely, right? But really hunting for that edge that allows me to be in my humanness. Mm-hmm.
So constantly finding your edge and going beyond it only occurs when you're in a zone of being uncomfortable. That is profound. And that you're continuing to live that way shows that you're truly committed to this work. Are you finding that your clients and the people you work with are benefiting from this practice that you have of continuous pushing for expansion? And how are they benefiting?
Absolutely. you know, it's leading by example, and it's not leading anyone, but leading myself by example and living a life of example for myself, what I think is a good, healthy, wholesome life. And naturally there's a resonance with people like yourself saying, hey, let's get on this podcast. Naturally there, you know, I do a breath work and, or I lead a talk and someone says, hey, you know, there's something there that triggered me to think differently, to look at life differently, to look at myself differently. So that already starts to create a placebo effect, right? In individuals. So I don't do anything for clients. I don't have a magic wand or some, you know, magical words or language or communication skills that change anyone. It's in this work of transformation. For me, when I was ready, I needed an affirmation outside of myself to match what I was ready for. So my decision was already within me. I made the decision and I created the opportunity to affirm my decision, to affirm my change. And the environment is feeding me what I need to be what I need to be, which I already affirmed. Does that make sense? You following?
Completely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So my clients come to me with this idea that whatever work we're going to do, it's going to work. So that's already 90% of it. The next, the 10% is the action.
Right.
Right. That they get to do and see the changes that they're doing. So I just highlight, look, you did this and this happened. You stopped doing this and this happened. So it's working and it's all on you.
Mm. Wow. So you've created a container that allows for that. So by the time your clients enter your container, they're already in the work and it's just a matter of putting some actions in.
Yeah. I work with people that are ready to look and take a hard, good, honest, raw look at themselves. And it's something that I've, you know, my ego or my character, people that know me have already developed this perception of who I am and how I communicate, very direct, very honest, integral. So they, when they're ready to meet themselves, it's like plant medicine. When you're ready to meet yourself in a mirror, that's going to show you everything, what's working and what's not working, show you that you have demons and they're there, then that's when clients come to me.
Mm.
Right? Because I don't sugarcoat shit. I don't waste time. I just say, look, this is how I live my life. This is my interpretation. This is what has worked for me in the past 20 years. In my experience, I'm going to bounce it to you and see if there's a resonance for you there, right? That you're ready to see.
Mm. And when they're ready, they take it on.
Absolutely.
That's, wow. So you live in Costa Rica now. You live in the jungles of Costa Rica. How long ago did that move happen?
This happened 5 years ago.
Hmm. Got it. Did you move there with the intention of moving past your edges and doing the work in the jungle? Or was there a specific reason why you chose Costa Rica?
You know, about 10 years ago, I had my first plant medicine experience. I was already full-time yogi, had a following, ambassador for Lululemon, sponsors. So I was in a good place with yoga. That was my life. When I had the plant medicine experience, there was a deep calling and resonance that I needed to get closer to nature and to my ancestry line. I was born in Argentina. In Argentina, my ancestry line are from the Andes. Mm-hmm. So that calling led me to, you know, I've been doing yoga retreats in Costa Rica for, you know, since I first started teaching yoga. I remember the quality and abundance of nature and how the nature holds you here in Costa Rica and how it also can eat you alive. So that rawness, that's what I was hunting for, to be in the rawness of nature, right? And all of these practices, these, you know, ancient and indigenous practices are to imitate nature, right? So I had the calling. I said, I need to be closer to nature. And I did a little bit of a tour in the United States to see if I wanted to just leave Miami or go live in Colorado, the West Coast. And the calling was Costa Rica. So in about 6 months after deciding that is right when I met my beloved, Sarah. And she was traveling from India and Australia. And I said, look, I just met you. If we're going to embark on a relationship, it's going to have to be in Costa Rica and it's going to have to be for the rest of our lives and make it work. And this was about a week of, you know, being romantic, a week after our first kiss, just to be clear. So I said, I'm not into dating. I've been celibate and dating free, women free for a while now. So if we're going to do this, it's going to have to be all the way. That's my agreement. And wow. Now we have a 2-year-old son.
Wow. Talking about going all in.
Yeah. 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 It's either a fuck yeah or a fuck no.
Fuck yeah or a fuck no. Wow. So you knew you were on the right path at that point. I mean, you had made a choice. Your beloved showed up in that choice, in your stand, and there you were. You were totally supported. So you mentioned plant medicine, right? And I want to jump into a little bit of talking about that, because part of the reason where I experienced your work was in my first plant medicine retreat back in 2018. Tell me about what are the benefits of plant medicine, specifically when you incorporate it with yoga.
The benefits to me of plant medicine is, you know, it comes back to the same inquiry of being ready to face ourselves. I used plant medicine as a permission slip to face my demons, right? And my angels. So it's an opportunity to take a deep dive into what we are most afraid of. What are behind the closed doors, dug into the shadows, the traumas, the shame, all that stuff that's there. And it's plant medicines are one practice that allows us to do that in a fast way. It's an express lane, mm-hmm. right? A lot of people don't want to, I at least didn't, a lot of people don't want to spend 15, 20 years in a meditation practice or in another practice connecting to the land with rituals. They'd rather just get it on a 5-hour sitting, right? Mm-hmm. Which is great that can happen. Mm-hmm. The connection with yoga, it's the same, because that is yoga. Yoga is union with our entire, all aspects of ourselves, mind, body, spirit, you know, inner self, true self, higher self. This is yoga. This also happens with plant medicine.
Mm. So plant medicine is a form of yoga.
I feel, and I believe, to me, it's a form of yoga. Absolutely. It's a form of psychotherapy. It's a form of inquiry. It's another opportunity to take a look at oneself and what's there. Mm. And it's not necessary, and it's not for everyone.
Yeah. But it's a tool in the toolkit of transformation.
Absolutely. 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 It's just another tool.
That's so interesting. Tell me about functional power yoga. So what's the difference between like what that style of yoga offers and what, let's say, like yoga asana or some of the more traditional styles of yoga offer?
Yeah. When I started practicing yoga, I started with a traditional classical form of yoga, which is vinyasa. My teacher was an Ashtangi, studied with Patabi Joyce, which is now dead. This was a very purist way of practicing. And I saw the benefits of it. There's a beauty and a benefit to it, to a certain mind, to a certain type of body. When I started practicing yoga, maybe about 10 years after that, I started diving into fitness, into movement and different ways of expressing movement. I got into CrossFit for a few years. Injury-free CrossFit. And so I started to mix and match and mesh and remix movement modalities that worked for me and my style. When I would go from sitting 8 to 10 hours in a desk to doing yoga, and I saw, well, how much yoga do I need to do in order to undo my physical patterns and my mental mm-hmm. patterns? And I saw that 1 hour of yoga was good, but it was not enough. I needed something else to complement how I was moving in the world, right? How I was moving and how I was thinking, how my mind was operating. And I also had a large private clientele that had similar lifestyles of, you know, very sedentary, working in a, you know, a desk office. And they would come to me and they would want to undo and unstuck themselves physically and mentally in just 1 hour and a half or so of yoga. And I saw that was not enough. And there's a lot of people that are injured out there, right? And they don't even know it. So going into yoga with injuries and not knowing that you have an injury will show up in a yoga practice. So I started to find more of a functional approach to the movements in general and looking at yoga exercise. We're talking about yoga exercise as an exercise. And I said, well, is this functional for me, for my body? And I started to say, no, it's not. I need something else. And also seeing after 10, 15 years of yoga exercise practice, some of my body parts were deteriorating and overstretching, which was not working for my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So I started to recruit more strength and conditioning, more mobility, more flow. And that's when the movement culture, which is now big, started to emerge, and it became about movement. So the closest I got to that at that time was functional power yoga. The yoga aspect is the meditative, the philosophy, the psychology of yoga. That's what I get the most out of in yoga. The movement aspect is the functionality. And the power in it is how we combine the psychology, the philosophy, and a functional moving body to live our lives optimally. So that's why functional power yoga. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes total sense. So it's actually bringing impact into daily life outside of practice by making it such that it is functional, right? And more, possibly more practical. I've heard people recently talk about how there is something lost when meditation is seen as a form of relaxation and when yoga is seen as a form of stretching and exercise. In other words, perhaps, you know, what the underlying benefit of yoga that's far beyond that is possibly not realized by people that practice that way. Do you feel that that's a criticism that's valid?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel that for myself, when I started diving into yoga, I was looking for the same things that a lot of people are looking for, which is quiet the mind and stretch my body. And I noticed that the quieting of the mind, the meditative aspect of yoga, was only maybe 2 to 3 minutes, if that, in an hour and 15 minute class. And everything else was physical exercise, right? So for me, I saw that there was a disconnect there, and I saw what I loved. Also, given that I started with meditation at a very early age, mm-hmm. I saw what I need from a yoga practice, which is more meditation and or more quieting or more ritual or more prayer, which are forms of meditation. And for my body, I need something else, that it's not the purest classical traditional way of yoga. Mm-hmm. That's why I moved away from yoga. A little bit, a lot, actually.
That's really interesting. How do you feel about people that are might feel intimidated or feel that they don't have the time to devote to it? What would you say to someone who's interested in it but has those doubts or those concerns?
You know, no one wants to feel stupid or like a fool when they first get on the bicycle with training wheels. Right.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, there's a lot of these movements, fitness and exercises, a lot of it is group activity. So people think that they have to be fit in order to start something in a group because they want to look good doing it. And off the bat, I just say, just do it. Just get in there and do it. And if you feel stupid, then feel stupid until you get over it. And if you feel like a beginner, then feel like a beginner and just keep doing it. For me, there's nothing more exciting than having the beginner's mind and the adventure of what that's like. I love that.
Yeah. And even if you can do it for a short amount of time, even if it's just a few minutes every day, just putting that in will have a profound impact. Even that little bit of work will begin to, I think, plant a seed perhaps that
absolutely
could sprout.
Just 10 minutes of moving the body in any way that anyone organically feels like moving their body and quieting the mind in any way, whether it's through a mind tool, through a mantra, through listening to a good piece of, you know, music, through prayer, through meditation, lighting incense, anything, just for 10 minutes, it's going to be good. It's better than nothing.
That's powerful. That's very powerful.
And it's accessible for everyone. It's accessible for everyone that doesn't have access, right? Because we also get to consider that these modalities are expensive and they're a luxury. And a lot of people don't have access to these ways. But nowadays there's YouTube. So, you know, if you're a mom, if you're a dad and you're taking the bus to feed your 3-4 children and you're on welfare, whatever the case may be, you can find just 3 to 5 minutes to do something for yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, going back to the retreat, where I experienced some of your facilitation. I remember one day we were working on breath work, and I had not done any true breath work before. I had done some pranayama and some real light breath work prior to meditation. But I remember going into a breath work session and thinking, and I believe this was after maybe one or two, maybe all three of our ayahuasca sessions, but it was somewhere in between ceremonies. And I remember thinking, well, if I've had a few cups of ayahuasca, this breath work is a cakewalk. And to this day, I remember how challenging it was. As a matter of fact, I couldn't go through with it. And to this day, I've been to other retreats and I find to be completely challenged and running into edges during the breath work. For some reason, my body starts to feel like I have no control over it. I start to feel like almost like a death or something that might be around the corner. And it's very scary for me specifically. And it's raised a little bit of self-doubt about whether I actually have control over my breath. So how does your breath work or your yoga practice help you heal and transform that sort of self-doubt? And what would you advise me here? Like in my situation that I'm now feeling like breath work seems to be the most challenging aspect for me.
Well, you mentioned something there that death is around the corner, right? And there's something about control, right? And really that's why we confront all of these practices, why we confront ourselves with all of these ancient traditions and practices, is to face our ego, to face our where we think we have control, what are we trying to control, and to ultimately kill it. Ultimately have that ego death, ultimately get beyond that, the fear that I am going to die, right? That's it. And the only way to get through that is to push that edge, right? And doing it in a way that you are taken care of by an experienced practitioner, facilitator that knows how to prepare you to go there, prepare you to know that you're safe and know that there's going to be an edge and know that you can get past that edge. And it's really all about surrender and letting go. So it comes with time, it comes with practice, and it comes with constantly putting ourselves in the face of life, really through that edge. Right.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
So the inquiry to support you would be, what are you afraid of losing?
I don't know. It's just, even now that I think about when I'm in the, when I start to sink into the breath, you start feeling sensations that you've never felt before, or you don't feel regularly in your body. And to me, it almost felt like a drowning sensation, or a sensation where, if I continue on with this breath work, like you said, I'm going to be completely out of control. And so I think through all of my ayahuasca ceremonies and my journeys, I've learned how to work with ayahuasca to sort of dive in with a knowing, as deep as I dive, I'll come back out. And I think because I've never had that with breath work, I'm still very hesitant about it. So it feels like it's an edge that will cause expansion for me. And that it's something for me, based on what you're saying, it's an edge for me to work through. And that's one particular instance that I feel uncomfortable with. And frankly, when I talk to others about it and I tell them, hey, look, I've sat in, I'm ayahuasca, black ayahuasca, whatever it is, I've experienced it and I know what it is, but breath work, I'm not so sure about that. And they all look at me like, breath work? Yeah, are you serious? So I really want to put there that there are breathwork practices that can take you extremely deep into this work. For me in particular, even deeper than ayahuasca. And for those that are maybe hesitant about plant medicine or hesitant about psychedelics, I would invite people to just do work with your own body using your breath or yoga, and you'll find it to be extremely powerful the way that I did. So tell me about Omani. I'm curious about this. I spoke to someone maybe about a year ago, Rylan Greenhouse is his name. He's a mutual friend. And he mentioned Omani and how it was the most transformational experience that he had ever been on. And I want to understand a little bit about that. What is it about Omani that really makes it different and that causes such transformation?
Yeah, thank you. Omani is a culmination of 20 years of experience and, you know, life coaching, mentoring, yoga, Indian cosmology, plant medicine, rites of passage, ritual. And it's 7 days. It's a digital detox, so no electronic devices. We practice intermittent fasting. We start our days, some days at 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30 in the morning. We work with the chakra system, starting at the root and then working our way up, obviously, through the crown. And the first 3-4 days are extremely challenging. The work that we do is it's in your face. The facilitators are constantly pushing everyone's edges. Everyone is invited to push everyone's edges. And ideally is to, again, see how we're showing up to any container. What is the mask that we're wearing? What are we hiding? Where are the fears? Where is the shame? Where is the inconsistencies? And really shine a light on these aspects of ourselves that we're not so proud of, we're not happy about, but in a way are running our life, right? And Omani is a million mirrors reflecting back at every one of us the moment we walk in the container. It's challenging, it's raw, and it's transformational. We have movement, meditation, or concentration techniques. We have breath work. We have ceremonies and ritual. We have prayers. We have sweat lodge. And it's intense. It's absolutely, it's intense. It's every day from 4 a.m, sometimes to 2 o'clock in the morning with very little sleep, food deprivation, sleep deprivation. And it's to, again, show us who are we when, who am I when I'm hungry, right? This is one of the first inclinations of me trying to get something that I'm going to find comfort in is food. It's desire. I'm going to feed my desire by eating. So it's like, well, what happens when food is taken away? Am I really hungry or do I just want to eat because I think it's time to eat, right? And we live our lives this way. Sometimes do I need to masturbate because I think it's time to ejaculate, right? Do I really need to ejaculate, right? Do I need to smoke? Do I need coffee right now? Do I need to get on Instagram? So really start to look at these patterns and belief systems and operating systems to start to hack them and really see, really come to our essence of who, start to inquire really, who am I? Why am I here? And what's my meaning and purpose in life? And in order to do that, we have to strip ourselves from who we think we are. And that's what gets tested, who we think we are. You know, we have psychologists join us. We've had Buddhist monks join us. We've had medicine men and women join us. So all walks of life, we don't have a demographic or target demographic. It's for everyone at any capacity that is ready to take on a challenge. Mm.
So transformation through being uncomfortable and really pushing past those edges. I see that as being extremely powerful. Just the act alone of reaching for some people, they at a particular time in the day, they'll reach into the cupboard and grab some snack, you know, a pretzel or whatever, just grab that smoke or that cigarette, or dealing with stress relief through things like masturbation or drinking or things like that. They become so habit that they become codified. And what you're saying is that you're breaking that foundational, that codification that's happened in 7 days, and realizing that there's so much power beyond that, and that you don't even realize that it's taking control or it's already taken control because it is such an operating system that you're hacking and disrupting. That is extremely powerful. And I can see it being very relevant in today's world. How does someone sign up? How does someone find you to be able to participate in Omani?
Well, through the website, omani.io, and all the information is there. And our email is there. And there's an application process. There's an intake application. There's a one-on-one discovery call with myself or someone from our team. And we begin the process. It's not for everyone. It's definitely for people that are ready to take a leap and make a change and truly see themselves and what they want to who they want to be and how they want to live their lives.
I got it. And for anyone that's listening or watching that's interested, if you're watching on YouTube, you can click in the description. We have a link to the Omani website, or feel free to go to, you said omani.io to get more information about that. That's awesome. This interview has been nothing short of outstanding and transformational. I have a last question for you. What lights you up these days? Like, what really makes you feel alive and lights you up?
My wife, my son, and being myself, just truly being myself and my freedom and my self-expression lights me up. Yeah.
And, you know, I love that you said that even today, you're not comfortable, which is beautiful because the work doesn't end. No matter where you are, there's always more to be done. And doing that work is so empowering, and it really gives you a true reason for existence and shines the purpose that you've clearly discovered along your path. So thank you for sharing this alchemy and this transformation. And frankly, now that I know a little bit more about Omani, I'm interested. Hopefully there isn't any too intense breath work, but I'm sure that because now you know that's my edge, that might be 7 days of breath work.
right. Hopefully
that we end up doing. It was an amazing conversation with your brother. It's amazing to see you again. I'm so happy to hear that you are on this path and the world is a much better place with people like you in it, doing this work and carving this light for transformation. So thank you so much for everything you do.
Likewise, brother. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Have a beautiful afternoon.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks for listening in to the Alchemist Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. To catch all the latest from Alex Atwood, you can check out his website at alexatwood.co. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time at the Alchemist Lounge.